There's no combination.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the Insight Teen Hour. My name is Frederick. I'm from Insight Treatment Programs, and it's Monday, 2 p.m. That means it's time for us to talk about items related to teen mental health. So today we decided we wanted to talk about how important peer support is and some of the work that we're doing out in the school, out in the schools. So here in Santa Clarita, we work with some of the private schools and some of the school and the school district to help and make sure that teens can hear from other teens what it means to grow up with mental health issues or what it means to be struggling as you're growing up. So at Insight, we have Christian Lara, who is here today in the studio. He's here to present how he's working with the school districts and the schools in our communities about providing some of these services that we can do for free out there. So welcome to the studio, Christian.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
Of course.
Yeah, so I'm Christian Lara, as you heard. I'm the director of school outreach at Insight Treatment Programs. And, you know, aside from our ILP portion, which I'm sure many viewers are already aware of, we provide free school-based services to local schools in the community to help them, provide resources to them, and really help get rid of the stigma surrounding mental health and drug awareness and bring a light to these, issues that we're facing in the schools. And so, I guess I'll talk a little bit about what we have going on in the schools and things like that. So we provide free school-based services, which entail anywhere from student presentations on topics relating to mental health, right, helping students understand and develop healthy coping mechanisms, as well as helping them understand and identify the negative coping skills that they might have developed, right, and helping them develop their emotional intelligence and to be able to help them in situations that they might need to, implement some new tactics or react a certain way a bit differently. So we definitely really emphasize in helping spread awareness regarding those issues. We definitely feel it's important to talk about the issues at hand, right? And so many times we are dealing with teens who are not aware of sort of what's going on with their feelings and their emotions. And so we have our clinical team come in and be able to put on these workshops to help them understand what they might be going through and how that might affect their mind, body, and soul. We also do drug awareness workshops as well for the students. We help them, again, understand the dangers of using. We help them understand how using substances or experimenting in substances can harm their loved ones as well as themselves, right? So it's very important to be able to talk about these issues and not shy away from them. They are in our environment. They are in our schools. And so, again, it's important to provide a platform for students to be able to feel comfortable in speaking out in regards to, anything that they're going through. It has to do with, regarding mental health and substance abuse. Again, the importance and the, sort of the goal of our workshops are to help encourage the teens to reach out for help and to not, keep inside of them what's going on, but more, make them feel a bit more comfortable as to, speak to someone or sort of voice what they're going through to be able to have that healthy outlet to, again, work through these issues and have that support in the community and resources at hand and all that great stuff, right?
But it's also for parents, right? Your drug workshops are also for parents to see different paraphernalia, to sort of for them to come in and ask questions to you and your team about, hey, I found this kind of drug at home. What does that mean? How does the vape look like?
Yeah.
It's basically education for parents as well as to what to look for, right?
Definitely. So our student workshops, that's just one part of our huge sort of push that we're doing. We do a lot of parent engagement as well. We do a lot of parent workshops that focus on drug awareness. Again, really being able to help parents understand the red flags that they might be noticing in their teens, help them understand sort of the current trends that are going on with the youth now. Right, a lot of these substances that are being abused or, you know, not talked about are substances that can be hidden at a glance, right, in plain sight. And so it's important for us to educate the parents and help them become more aware of what's going on with the teens. A lot of these substances that Frederick has mentioned, right, so what we like to do is we like to bring in basically items that we've confiscated throughout the years from our facilities and showcase them on a table for the parents to get a firsthand look of what these items might look like. It's a great way for parents to really, again, bridge that gap in understanding between what's out there and what they might have, have had experience with in the past, right? So definitely the world is changing, and so in order for us to change as well and adapt, then we have to understand the trends that are going on with the youth, right? So a lot of parents have, a lot of questions regarding vaping and sort of the damages that does, the red flags when it comes to vaping, what, these vaping utensils or sort of equipment might look like. And so it's a great way to, again, be able to help parents be in the know and help them understand what might be going on, again, helping them with red flags and how to identify those, how to approach those in a healthy and positive way, and how to have resources available on hand, right? A plan of action, things like that, to be able to, again, make that interaction as healthy as possible for everyone involved.
And you would set that up sort of during the week on a Tuesday night, for instance, together with the school, and the school would invite all their parents to come in, and you would come out there with your panel with a drug and alcohol counselor yourself and present some of these things, right?
Yeah, definitely. So we definitely want to work with the school as much as possible and accommodate to their needs. Obviously, every school is different, so we accommodate accordingly. Some schools have a huge parent involvement in the mornings, right? They have their coffee with the admin event coffee with the principal event. Basically, we like to use those events to be able to, garnish as much audience as possible. But again, there's also schools that have a huge, a bigger sort of audience in the afternoons, right, once parents get off work. Other schools are more interested in doing a virtual presentation, which is fine as well. We can do that as well. So it really just depends on what the school is looking for and their needs. And of course, we're able to accommodate that, providing one of our certified drug and alcohol counselors or myself to the area and be able to talk about them and answer questions and have that healthy communication with the parents to be able to help them in any situations that they might be going through or they have gone through, right?
So, and you also, I know you sometimes have our therapist come out to the school and do a presentation to the parents out there about, anxiety or bipolar or whatever it might be, use of social media, but basically have our therapist come to the school and do some education to parents, right?
Definitely. That's also another huge component of our school engagements. So we have our clinical team, right, whether it be one of our therapists or clinical directors, come in and speak to the parents, again, provide a workshop, help them understand, again, sort of what the trends that we see going on in our facility and sort of how that is something, parents might encounter, right? Again, that can be noticing the red flags, whether their teen might be self-isolating or changing sleeping habits, changing behaviors, change of friend group, things like that, right, that we help parents understand and identify so that, when they do come across that, they're able to catch that, they're able to intervene, again, in a healthy and positive manner and be able to provide the needed help and support that their teen is looking for. Again, it can be as simple as just validating their teen's emotions or making them feel heard. But in the grand scheme of things, we really want the parents to be educated in terms of how to react to these situations and how to have an appropriate means of seeking help and, being a bit more connected with the school and working as a team and being able to utilize as many resources as possible to be able to provide that support for their teen. So those, parent presentations are typically run via PowerPoint. They're about an hour in length, And the last 15 minutes of these PowerPoints, we like to open it up for Q&A. Again, giving parents an opportunity to sort of voice what they're going through, ask advice or comment or sort of, you know, speak to our team and get the answers that they, you know, might be looking for. It just varies. But definitely, again, it's just like a great way for us to have a discussion with them and also get rid of the stigma surrounding mental health and just, again, giving parents a means of having a healthier relationship with their teen.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and all of this is for free. The school just needs to reach out to you or reach out to Insight, and then you can help them set that up. Right.
Definitely. Definitely. Anyone who's interested or, you know, whether it's a school staff or a parent at a school or you have a family or friends in other schools that might benefit from our services, they're completely free of cost. You can always reach out to us. You can reach out to me at Christian@insighttreatment.com. You can reach out to my telephone number, which is 818-425-3428. Again, we'll be more than happy to speak with you and give you a breakdown of what these engagements might look like. We also provide mental health weeks as well. If that's something, if the school needs a bit more support, we'd be more than happy to provide that as well and get that going, as well as connecting you with other programs in the community, other resources as well, and being able to really, you know, provide as much help as possible for any school that needs it.
Good. So one of the things we haven't spoken about yet is sort of – I know a big part of what you present in the schools is these teen panels, right, where you, Christian, you have some of our alumni kids or some of the kids that have been – or are in treatment at Insight. They come out to the school and host what we call a teen panel, where the teens are basically talking about their life story to other teens. And I think that's why we're here in the studio today, because peer support is extremely helpful. And in the studio today, we also got Drew, who is an alumni client. And she's here today to sort of talk to us a little bit about why she thinks and why we think that this peer support is so important. So typically, teens that are struggling with anxiety or depression or drug use are sort of very – they feel that they're very different than other kids. They feel that they are very alone with some of these things that they're feeling emotionally. They often feel that nobody understands them. And they certainly, in many cases, feel that adults are sort of done trying to help them out. You know, they're done with listening to older people telling them how they feel and what they should do and not do. So I think it's extremely important that teens are able to talk to other teens about some of the things they've been going through. And it requires a whole lot of, you know, confidence and strength to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. And Drew is one of the alumni kids here from Insight who has been out into the schools a lot of times to talk to other kids about some of the things she went through, and sort of help other teens understand how they can support each other. So what we're going to talk about today is, you know, what are these teen panels, why are they so important, and why peer support should be such a huge part of treatment, right? Mm-hmm. So, I would like to ask, before we go to you, Drew, let's just ask Christian one last time. So these teen panels, you also offer those in the schools, and how exactly does that work?
Yeah, so if a school is interested in having one of our teen speaker panels take place on their campus or virtually, again, we're willing to accommodate to the school's needs and their schedule. Some schools dedicate an assembly for these panels. Other schools dedicate class periods, right? It just sort of depends on sort of what works best in terms of scheduling. But what we like to do is bring in a teen or two, one of our alumni, and come in and speak to the students on their experience with mental health, their experience with substance abuse. Sort of, again, depending on what the school wants us to talk about, we can find a teen with that background and be able to really focus on the issue at hand. It's a great way for our teens to be able to continue with those positive reinforcements and positive values that they've already have in themselves. But it's also a great way for the audience members, the other students, to hear it from another teen's perspective, mm-hmm. and be able to you know, have that message resonate with them very well. Of course, we do it with adults as well, but sometimes when a teen hears it from an adult, it's one ear, it's in one ear, not the other, right? So sometimes we feel that although effective, right, hearing it from other teens' perspective is just that much more impactful. And, you know, as Drew could mention in a bit as well, you know, the reaction of our audience or the students is always, has always been great. It's always been really, you know, one of, you know, gratefulness and appreciating, you know, our teens coming in and being vulnerable and really sharing their story with mm-hmm. them and, you know, in hopes that it guides them in a different direction to make healthier decisions in life, to seek out the help that they might need. So typically, again, our teen panels run about 30 minutes to an hour, just sort of depending on the availability for the school. But if, again, it's something that you would like to have at your school, then, again, just please feel free to reach out to me. We can discuss that.
Yeah, that's great. So I know we're going into a break in a little bit, but, Drew, tell us a little bit about what made you say yes when Christian was asking, hey, who would like to come out into the school and sit in this teen panel and talk about your history? What intrigued you to do that?
Growing up, when I was struggling a lot, I think that I felt alone most of the time, and that kind of pushed me away from asking for help because I felt like nobody really understands what I'm going through, and especially the adults don't. Having adults come in for assemblies, talk about things, and it's like, it doesn't feel like they really relate. It doesn't feel like I can connect to these people because mm-hmm. they're a lot older than me, and they might not understand the struggles that I face today as a kid or a teenager. So I do find it like really important for teenagers who are struggling to hear it from other teenagers who really understand, and it's that connection is easier to make. And I think I'm a lot more receptive to hearing things from someone my age or a peer that goes through what I go through, and it can give me hope that somebody understands me and I'm not alone and I'm not crazy, and people are there to support me.
Yeah. How do kids usually react when you come out? Like, do they come up afterwards and say things to you, or let me see. Good. How do other kids usually react when you go out into the school?
I think it depends on the school. Usually, people come up after. I've had some give me hugs and thank me for sharing. Those are always like my favorite mm-hmm. to see and hear that I inspire people is like the biggest compliment that I can get. And then some schools are more kind of like quiet and not as interactive. But I mean, if maybe one of the things that I said can get in someone's head and help them feel less alone, I mean, that's what I look for.
So. Yeah, exactly. We're planting some seeds, right? And sometimes yeah. in the moment you don't see it grow, but then later on maybe, or mm-hmm. if just one starts growing, that's amazing, right? That's all we can do.
Mm-hmm.
Got it? Good. I think we have to go into a little break now, but as soon as we come back, we'll talk more about, you know, your life story mm-hmm. and you'll get an opportunity to tell us a little bit about what you went through mm-hmm. and we can talk more about how these teen panels play itself out and what the other kids, what their reactions are.
Mm-hmm.
So you're listening to the Insight Teen Hour. This is on KHTS 98.1 FM.
There's no combination of words.
Good afternoon and welcome back to the Insight Teen Hour. I'm Frederick from Insight Treatment Programs here in Santa Clarita. And in the studio today, I have Christian Lara, who is head of our efforts to help out schools and talk about mental health issues. And I've got Drew here in the studio, who's an alumni client from Insight, and who often goes into our schools and talks to her peers or to the other students about how she grew up with mental health issues and how it affected her life and some of the things she went through to sort of inspire other kids to start talking about it and opening up about it and potentially seeking help with some of the things they're going through. So, Drew, I would love to go back to you and mm-hmm. take your time. Can you explain a little bit about your history? Like, what did you go through mm-hmm. as a teenager? What, you know, what is sort of your life story?
Thank you. Growing up was a bit difficult for me. especially even starting as early as elementary school. I was bullied quite a bit. A lot of family issues and arguing in my household, and I felt very alone growing up and kind of invalidated. I felt like when I did talk about my mental health struggles, it was kind of like, you know, like, that's hormones, it's puberty, like, it's your teen emo phase, like, you know, just being a teenager, you'll get through it. And then it didn't really get better from there. It got worse through middle school. But as early as sixth grade, I started self-harming. And it became like an addiction for me. It was a way for me to release my emotions, and it wasn't a healthy way, but it was what I knew. And all I knew was that it felt good, and I didn't really care about why I was doing it or that it wasn't good for me. It was just like, this is what I'm going to be doing.
This gets you through the day, basically, right?
Yeah,
this was
yeah.
your coping mechanism, and yeah.
And even when I went to middle school in seventh grade, I was still self-harming, and I wasn't really sure why at that point. Like, it just became habit. It wasn't even just when I was feeling down or depressed anymore. It was just kind of like, this is what I'm used to doing.
Did mom and dad know at that time? Did your family know, or did you hide it pretty good?
I hid it pretty well.
Okay.
I hid it for a long time. Mm-hmm. And eighth grade was kind of when my mental health kind of spiraled more. And then they found out about this. Mm-hmm. And they were really, really worried. I was getting bullied, like, severely in eighth grade. I had some traumatic things happen to me that kind of just... Everything was just piling on top of my shoulders, and it was just weighing me down. I barely went to school. I was self-harming a lot. I had a lot of issues with friends and being, like, betrayed and, like, bullied again. And I had several suicide attempts as young as 12 and 13. And when I was... around 14, they diagnosed me with bipolar disorder, which ended up not being correct. But they put me on medication, when I was like 12. So, I mean, I'm still on medication now, but I mean, different ones, but the journey of medication started when I was pretty young. And I think that you have to be careful about that kind of stuff, because as I got older, they kind of just piled more medication on top, and it wasn't helping me as much as it was, the side effects were hurting me. Mm-hmm. And I was still a kid. But
how was your, when you were very young and going through this, how were you able to hold relationship? Did you have some very good friends you were speaking to? Did you have a good communication with your mom and dad? Like, what was your situation like?
The close friends I did have weren't very nice to me. Mm-hmm. It was like, these are people that I'd hang out with at school, but I'd also get teased by them, or even like physically like pushed around. And like, it was kind of like, this is what I have. And it didn't feel like I had other options for people to hang out with. My communication with my parents was not great. I isolated myself a lot. When my depression was getting bad, I just stayed in my room in the dark for most of the time. They were pretty worried about me, but I kept to myself a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. And I was going to therapy, even as young as like fourth grade, in and out of different therapists, but I never really clicked with anyone, and I didn't like the idea of being vulnerable. So I kind of just, I stopped going.
Didn't share everything that was going on with you with the therapist at the time?
When I was younger, definitely not. Okay. And when I got to seventh grade, I had a therapist that I shared more with, and she was cool. But I felt like nothing really helped a lot when I was at that time period. Mm-hmm. A lot of things were still piling up on me, a different stress and pressure. Yeah, and...
Can you talk about, like, yeah, I know that you are very into sports and soccer, right? Can you talk about how that impacted your mm-hmm. activities outside?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been playing soccer since a young age, and when my depression got worse and eventually drug use, I stopped going. I quit because I was bullied. I was very insecure, and I compare myself to a lot of people, and so because of those comparisons, I didn't even want to go outside. I didn't like the idea of me having my hair in a ponytail for soccer. I didn't like I wore the same hoodie every day. Like I wanted to hide from everyone. So in eighth grade, when, I started vaping, and honestly, it might've been seventh grade. I had no idea what I was doing. I was kind of like, this is cool. Something I wanted to try, I guess. But from there, like, I remember I had a boyfriend in eighth grade that, like, smoked weed, like, a lot, and he introduced me to it. And I remember the first time that I got high, I was, like, I remember thinking to myself, like, wow, like, I'm so happy. Like, I want to feel like this. Like, I want to feel like this always. I didn't have to think about how much I hated myself or the things that had traumatized me or anything like that. Like, I felt so good. And I thought that those good feelings would stay and it would just have good impacts on me. But later down the line, it spiraled and it became like I was using every day because if I wasn't high, then I didn't really want to be alive, and I became dependent on it to sleep, to eat, to feel good. And it was like without it, I was like even more low. So like I convinced myself that it was a good thing, mm-hmm. that this helps my anxiety, this helps me not hate myself. So like it's justified, even though I'm a 13-year-old kid. So that it started out as like a social like. For fun thing, and then it quickly became I need this or I'm gonna wanna hurt myself. And I think that it's easy for a lot of kids at that age to not really like even really care about what they're doing because it's so normalized. Vaping and smoking weed at young age is like it's becoming even more normalized, and it's like I might hear, like, a kid, like, say, like, oh, it's just weed, you know, I'm not doing anything more than that. And I'm like, well, you know, that's what I said at that age. And then, you know, things got a lot worse for me. But eventually, after a while, like, the weed, like, it wasn't enough anymore. I had gotten used to it. And I had also gotten caught with my parents a few times. And, I stole money from them, I lied to them, I manipulated them, I did a lot of things that they don't reflect the person I am today at all. But when I was in that mindset, I was so consumed by, I feel bad, so I want to feel better. That means I'm going to do anything that I can to make me feel better. And I damaged the relationship with my parents a lot. And they were upset, but they were mostly worried about me. Because, I mean, that's not me. That's not who I am. I don't do that to the people that I love. And that's why it was most concerning, because it's like, who is this? Doing things that I wouldn't do. And I think that that's a common thing in drug abuse and addiction, is like your morals kind of shift, like mm-hmm. pushed off to the side. It's just like, I want to feel good, so I'm going to do what I need to do to feel good. And you don't really think about, this is hurting the people that I love. It's just kind of like, you know, I want what I want. So I was on and off self-harming and using a lot during eighth grade. And I had been hospitalized several times, suicide attempts and self-harm. And eventually my the boyfriend that I had that introduced me to marijuana, also was doing Xanax. And so I had tried that. And I remember the same thing, kind of just like, wow, like, it was like relieving. Like, I don't have to feel the things that I have to feel, like, that I feel daily. But after a while, it's just like, that's not enough. It wasn't enough. Like, I needed to be completely consumed by that feeling always, or else, you know, I needed to keep doing it. I need more. I need to hide. I need to run away from what I'm feeling. I can do anything that I can to run away from what I'm feeling, and that's self-harm or drugs or, like, putting myself in risky and dangerous situations and being impulsive and things that, like, acting out and anything that kind of, like, distract me from what I was feeling and how much, like, I still had hated myself and how much I was consumed by all the things that people had told me and all the things that I was feeling. So, yeah, and when freshman year came around, I had tried going to public school for a few weeks, and it was too much. It was overwhelming. I eventually ended up going to a, it's not necessarily a private school. It's like it's a charter school for kids who struggle with emotional needs. And it was helpful, but I was still not going to school. I barely got credits for ninth grade, because I was out of school and hospitalized, and I went to a few short-term residentials here. They're in Woodland Hills, where I stayed there for a bit. It would be like I got caught doing drugs or self-harming, and then I'd be like, all right, well, I guess I don't really have much to, like, live for. Like, if I can't feel that way, I can't do that, then it's kind of like, what's the point? Now I'm forced to feel, like, what I don't like feeling. And, yeah, my relationship with my parents was very damaged, and they were very worried about me, and there was no trust there. And I wasn't doing soccer. I wasn't doing the things that, like, made me feel better. And in October of 2019, I had overdosed, and I was in the medical part of the hospital for a few days before they sent me into the psychiatric part. And the levels of the drug in my blood were toxic, and it was pretty scary, but I remember, like, waking up and just being like, ugh, I didn't do it, you know? And it was a really, really sad time period in my life. It was really difficult, and I hated myself, and I felt like there was no point to anything, and the drug use and the self-harm just tripled that. And eventually I started abusing medication I was prescribed, and so more pills, and kind of just, that was my way of living, was just hiding. And I felt like people don't understand what I'm going through, you know, like, if they really understood, then they wouldn't be mad at me for smoking, because it helps me. And I was justifying it. I was a kid, but I feel like I damaged a lot of healthy friendships I had at that time as well, and I became closer with people who weren't good for me, because the people who weren't good for me weren't telling me that I was doing bad things. They would do them with me. And the people that I cared about, when they would tell me that I'm not, like, that I should stop doing what I'm doing, or that I'm harming myself, I was just kind of like, shut up, like, I don't care. Why do you care if I don't care? Like, it's myself. I'm doing it to myself. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I just didn't want to accept the fact that people cared about me, because I didn't care about myself. So I was kind of like, it can't be true.
Drew, what would you say to kids now if they have a friend that's using as you were doing and who would say exactly what you were saying to them, meaning stay out of my way, you know, let me do my thing, you're not a good friend, if you snitch on me, you're not the right friend for me. Mm-hmm. Like, what would you encourage them, what would you say to them today?
I think that I would, it's difficult because it varies on situations, but the most important thing is just letting them know, like, that you're there for them and that you really do care, and whether they like to hear it or not, people care about them. And, you know, tell them that it makes you sad to see them, to see them destroy themselves. And, you know, if it's concerning, talk to a counselor or a close friend that also is friends with them and kind of see, like, what they should do and if it's serious. And they're really spiraling, you can talk to a parent. And I know that I've had friends that were really, really, like, really suicidal, and it's like they didn't want me to tell anyone, but it's like, okay, I need to tell your parents because I don't want you to, like, end up ending your life. And it's like, you could be mad at me right now, but, like, maybe later on you'll thank me.
That's right, right? I think it's important to get to that point where you know that, hey, look, the best way to show your love for your friend is not by shutting up and holding on to that secret, but rather to expose it and say, look, exactly like you said, I'm going to have to talk to your parent. If you're not telling them, then I have to, because that's how I know now that I need to show my respect and my love for you. So, sorry, can't hold on to that one.
And Drew, I know that we're not able to hear the whole of your story, but can you just let listeners know sort of your sobriety dates and things like that, right? I know that's
that would to be hear great. That. Yeah. How many days?
Over 2 years for both. Wow. I've been self-harm free since August 2020 and sober since July of 2020. So,
congratulations. Yeah. And graduating high school this summer?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Played varsity for last year, right?
Yeah, for my
school. You do?
I did for my school before the season ended.
Nice. Congratulations. Yeah. Well, I know we're going to go into a little break, but then we'll come back again for a few more minutes and talk to you, Drew. So, thank you for listening out there. You're listening to KHTS 98.1 FM, and this is the Insight Teen Hour.
There's no combination.
Good afternoon, and welcome back to the Insight Teen Hour. This is Frederick from Insight Treatment Programs, and we are talking with Drew here in the studio today. Drew, who has told us our life story, her life story. And Drew, I just wanted to come back to a little bit about what diagnosis did you actually get? And I know you said bipolar, but that was taken off the table as part of this whole process. So, yeah.
So, after a lot of suicide attempts and trying to run away, I was sent to a long-term program in Utah. And there they had diagnosed me with borderline personality disorder. And I wanted to talk about that a little bit because it's a very stigmatized and misunderstood disorder. I think that, like, if you Google stuff about it, you'll find a lot of articles written by people who don't have it, who want to talk about how toxic and manipulative and horrible people with BPD are. But it's very complicated. It stems from usually either genetics or childhood trauma, which is usually what it's stemmed from. And it consists of mood swings and feeling things very intensely. So for me, like, I don't feel happy. I feel ecstatic. I don't feel sad. I feel depressed. I don't feel annoyed. I feel angry. And it's kind of like a 0 to 100 thing. And on your frontal cortex, where the amygdala is, for normal people, like, it's like, for people with BPD, it's smaller. So that's the amygdala is how your brain processes emotions. Because it's smaller, like, we're usually more reactive. And it can be managed, medication and therapy, which I have been working on managing it for a long time. But I think that it's important to know that we feel things very intensely, and it's not a one-size-fits-all. For people with this disorder, it's very, very intense and can often feel like a curse. But I don't know, I feel like people hear borderline personality disorder and they think, like, they hear personality disorder and they think narcissistic personality disorder or, like, multiple personalities or anything like that. And I'm like, no, it's just a very reactive disorder, and it affects like I have like big fears of abandonment, which is a big part of having BPD, and affecting relationships with my peers and relationships with people in general. But after learning to manage that and really understand what it meant, working on myself, working on letting go of the things that I had been told, and I hold on to so many grudges, and I hated myself. I was able to work through that at my time in the treatment in Utah. I was able to repair the relationship with my family, and it was really difficult. I was scared. I was so used to being stuck in the negative feelings that stepping out of that, trying to be happy, was something that was out of my comfort zone. So it was almost like I didn't want to, because that, I wasn't used to that. I wasn't used to not hating myself or not feeling ashamed. So once I stepped out of that and I put past those fears, I was able to fix the relationships with not only my family and my friends, but also with myself, which is the most important. And I'm able to love myself and embrace the things that even I don't like about myself, I can embrace them and know that I'm human. And I want to say how important it is to ask for help. I wish that I asked for help when I was younger. And I like doing teen panels because I like being able to encourage people my age, or at least let them know that these struggles are real and it's not to be taken lightly. And there is help that you can get, and there's people you can go to, and just kind of like, you're not alone. And you are loved and you're cared for, and it might feel like you're alone, but something I learned when I was like looking back when I was deep in my depression and suicidal feelings, it's like, it didn't matter how many people loved and cared about me, because I couldn't feel it. I pushed that all the way. And it's important to recognize that, because people could be telling you to your face, like, that they care, and it's just kind of like, you deny it, because you don't think that you deserve that care and that love, but you do, you really do.
And also, I think a lot of teens don't feel that there's light at the end of the tunnel, mm-hmm. that this will ever change. You know, mm-hmm. I often hear, Frederick, leave me the heck alone, mm-hmm. because this is the way I've been feeling since I was, as long as I can remember, mm-hmm. and it's not going to change. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think when you come in, mm-hmm. and you're sitting in a teen panel like that, and you're explaining to the other kids, hey, look, mm-hmm. it actually can change. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is light.
Yeah.
You just don't give up, you know, keep working at it, keep getting your parents involved, you know, work mm-hmm. on it as a family. I think that is the best inspiration you can get, right?
Yeah.
So I think you have an ability, or you are creating that light at the end of the tunnel for many kids. Mm-hmm.
I think a few years ago, if you told me that I'd be graduating high school in a few months, like I would have laughed. I wouldn't have believed you. I didn't think that I'd be alive this long, and I didn't really want to be. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of crazy, like being able to accomplish these things in like every birthday and these big milestones. It's like, I'm here for it, you know, and I'm really glad that I didn't take my life. And I almost did several times. And it's like, at those moments, I did not think that I would ever like feel better or not hate myself. Or I don't think I'd ever be like, yeah, I enjoy living. But like it happened, and it's there, and it might feel horrible what you're sitting in right now. I'm not here to say like, oh, just smile, because that's nonsense. It's a lot more difficult than it sounds. But there is hope. I definitely am glad that I am alive today. And I think that if you're struggling right now and not really feeling like you want to be here long, or you feel like you're being consumed by your emotions and this is all you're feeling, so it's all you're ever going to feel, just know that there's a way out, and there is a light at the end of the tunnel, like you said.
Yeah, just to use that. And also that peers are part of that, right? Mm-hmm. The group experience and the idea of getting treatment in a group setting and mm-hmm. talking to other kids who are feeling the same way is really important, right? It's mm-hmm. not just about the credentials of the therapist or mm-hmm. their ability to talk to. It really is about group and peer support.
Yeah, exactly. And that was a big thing that was important to me for when I came to Insight, finding support, was because I felt like my social circle didn't really understand what I was going through, and I felt more alienated and alone, and kind of that feeling of like, I'm crazy, I'm upset over nothing, people don't understand, and invalidating my own struggles. And I can fall into that spiral of nobody gets me. And then finding a group that I feel supported by was really important for me. And also that's why, like I said, I enjoy doing these teen panels, for letting people know that they're not alone, and it's easier to hear from someone your age that understands.
Exactly. Thanks for doing that, Drew. Mm-hmm. Keep doing it. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you very much. Before we end the show today, I know Christian has a couple of things to say, mm-hmm. but great job, Drew.
Thank you.
Thanks for helping out other kids and helping mm-hmm. out Insight by doing that. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much, Drew. Amazing as always. I think I can speak for everyone when I say we really appreciate your courage, your bravery, your honesty. It's something that's great to be able to be a part of and see. Mm-hmm. If you like Drew's story, if you want us to host a teen panel at your school, we have many other alumni who also have great stories as well. Everyone unique and beautiful in their own way. Please feel free to reach out to us. Reach out to me at christian@insighttreatment.com, or you can visit us at our website. You can find our school tab link there, and you can get more information about us. And again, we would love to host any sort of teen panel or school event that you would like us to do, right? That would benefit your school community, the parents, students, whatever it may be. Again, we're always willing to accommodate to the school's needs and provide that support that's much needed nowadays. Mm-hmm. So thank you so much, Drew. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Frederick.
Thank you.
We'll be back next week, or I won't be back, but Frederick will be back for their weekly programming. But other than that, really appreciate you both.
Thank you. Yeah, tune in next Monday, 2 p.m. for the Inside Teen Hour. Mm-hmm.